Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's April the 27th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, there are questions about whether or not FDA should be making food safety inspections. And the U.S. Senate has passed legislation that includes $3.5 million in disaster aid. It's part of the package that sets a timeline for withdrawal from Iraq. President Bush is expected to veto the bill. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. A bit later in the program, are you planting Roundup Ready corn? Are you prepared for glyphosate-resistant weeds? As you'll hear, their time is coming. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour that Steve Hilberg will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast for the weekend and beyond. It all happens on this Friday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby May wheat, 6.5 cents lower today at $5.5. July futures, the harvest month, down 8.5 at 512.5, and September's at 521, settled 6.75 lower. May corn futures, 364.25 off a half. July down 1.5 at 373.75, and December contract at $3.67.5, down 6.5 for the afternoon. May soybean futures 723 up 4.75. July futures at 738.5 up 3.5, and November beans at 766.5 up 4.25 this afternoon. May bean meal futures $1.70 lower at 192. May bean oil at 32.93 up 74, and from the Mercantile Exchange, nearby May feeder cattle settled 40 cents higher at 108.55. The April live cattle at 97.20 were up 65 cents. And June futures were 57.5 cents, 100 weight higher at 93.27.5. May lean hog futures at 74.45, down 62.5 cents on a Friday afternoon. Outside markets, crude oil futures 66.40 in the nearby June contract, $1.34 higher. July futures at $67.85 a barrel, and they are $1.44 higher for the afternoon. Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 13,130, and they're up just about 24 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, as he does each and every Friday afternoon, is Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You know, as you take a look at the numbers for the week, it appears that most of the losses on the weekly charts for the December corn contract came on this Friday afternoon. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, between yesterday and today, a lot of that would be chalked up to the weekly, how far off we're off the weekly highs. July, in fact, still off 17.5, and July had a pretty decent day today. Corn in particular, you give it a moral victory from a standpoint that it didn't sink too much farther down, even when the wheat finished and closed out a little bit softer than we would have liked to have seen. The spreads were nice. Maybe we're getting to the point where the May delivery and question marks there, the good export demand and the firm basis is keeping the front end strong and firm at least. But the open planting weather has, you know, caused some weighing on the new crop.
You said 17.5 in the July. Was July corn off 17.5 for the week? No.
No, off the weekly week. Off the weekly high.
Off the week. Oh, off the weekly high.
Yeah.
You threw me there for a second. I heard that 17.5 cent drop, and I was thinking I didn't see that in the corn for the week, but that was the weekly high.
We were hoping we'd finish at the weekly highs given all the planting delays, but such is life, I guess.
Yeah. So how do we make what do we make of this week when you have a lower week amidst rainfall?
Yesterday, if you had asked that question to me, I don't think I would have had a very good answer. I think when I started looking at the markets this morning for the weekly, you know, kind of refreshing myself over everything of what's been going on, we did have that first notice day injecting into the psychology of the market. We've got the end of the month and some long liquidation that started yesterday there. It was interesting because if you looked at all the commodities across the board yesterday, it was a pretty wide commodity, you know, liquidation mode that we were in. The wheat failing at those key highs, that happened, you know, later in this week. And then obviously the weather model. So I guess I would say chalk it up to those three things as far as why we haven't been able to structurally go higher and form a new trend, and we just keep beating ourselves up in this trading range market and causing a lot of frustration. I think the other thing that we picked up later in the week this week, Todd, was the shorts that are in this market right now, especially in the corn, they're in there on the weather more than they are anything else because they know the demand's really good. They know the supply is not yet secure because the planting isn't over with. So they're in there on the weather and betting on the come that we're going to get it planted. So our mindset would be they're probably the weakest shorts we've seen this year, the new ones that just came on board here this week. And that's where it comes back to what we're going to watch next week. How heavy are the deliveries in corn? What's that second week of weather look like? Because there is some discussion and some talking points about how wet we get and how much we stay warm, or are we going to go back to a cooler pattern again? And then obviously the most important thing for me when it comes to the funds and the corn in particular is this commitment of traders report due out here at 2:30 your time. How long are those index traders on that CTI supplement?
Is next week a very important week in your mind, or is it just a week that we need to keep an eye on?
You know, it's getting more and more to the point where, yes, it is from a standpoint that the trade's going to have to give on the idea that you're going to have both high acres and high yield. Timing-wise, we think that is very, very important, and structurally, you're in that window where if you delay Iowa, Nebraska, Missouri, and parts of Minnesota again yet another week, you're not going to have corn popping through the ground until May 10th, May 12th, something like that. So you're looking at the potential for some real serious yield issues. And our consultant, as far as weather goes, he's not pushing this really hard yet, but he's saying don't give up on the idea that we're not going to have another frost scare. And it's interesting because Europe is supposedly, especially the CIS states of Europe, are supposedly going to get some frost scares next week. It's interesting because he's talking about maybe 7 to 9 days out, we turn back cooler again, and he might be looking for a frost scare here in the States as well. So, yes, timing is important from those respects. I think, though, what's increasingly important is the price action. When we break above the trading range, one way or the other, 360 on the downside for corn, $4, 405 on the upside, that will probably start our new trend, we would think.
We discussed the market this week and on commodity week last weekend, and I think a bit even prior to that. The one thing we haven't heard or talked much about is the demand side in the last few weeks because we've got into the planting season now. But ethanol doesn't seem to be on many people's lips at this time. Is that simply because it was purchased, the acres were purchased already, and they're not particularly worried about ethanol and demand on the backside, and it's just simply a weather market at this point, or is there something else that afoot in that industry that we need to watch?
No, that's a good point. I think it's a real good question and very timely because you're probably getting some negative price action based upon the political correctiveness or the speculative community's mindset of corn blended ethanol. It is definitely kind of going back to what we talked about at the beef house meeting. It's definitely gone from a political football to a political hot potato. It's got a negative connotation to it, and that's in the future, that as soon as we can get new technologies up, we're going to try and do that as fast as we can. We don't want to take that food versus fuel debate too far, and it's interesting. This week I got a new copy of the Foreign Affairs magazine, one of the premier magazines out there on foreign policy. Guess what was the headline? Corn ethanol, that food and fuel debate. So it's getting press all over the place, and most of it's negative press. But I think that's where I had a good conversation with a client that stopped in here today about this specific thing. This is one of those issues where you still need the corn-blended ethanol until you get that new technology. You're still going to need 11 to 12 billion gallons of ethanol. The plants that are being built and are increasing and ramping up their production are going to supply that 11.5 to 12 billion. You're still going to have to use that, and that's still going to be the preferred blending stock for the oxygen requirement until we get that new technology or until Congress changes and makes moves on their tariffs or makes a move on a new type of oxygenate if they can come up with it. But until then, that demand is there, and it's not really going to be lowered at all in the near term. But certainly looking out, ethanol is not the golden boy anymore. You can definitely say that at this point.
Boy, fate is fickle and quick sometimes, it seems.
It is. It really is, especially when it comes to commodities. You know, that's the one thing that I've learned. That's one thing that will never change, even with the funds or anything else, is that commodities are a whipsaw market, and they probably always will be, just because there's just the basic natural resource that we have to have at certain times, and then we don't want them at all when the rest of the world isn't doing that good. Commodities are plentiful and ample. You know, it's like the 60s. Plenty of oil in the 60s, and then we didn't have any in the 70s. Plenty of oil in the 90s, now we don't have any right now. It's kind of the exact same dichotomy we're facing right now.
Yeah, speaking of not having any right now, $67, I think, was what I read there on the price of crude at this point. And they're talking about $4 gasoline across the nation maybe this summer.
Yes, the refinery issues, the planned shutdowns, unplanned shutdowns, imports dropping, and demand staying strong are all big, big issues that we put in a recent energy special update we sent out to clients, that really we think the Department of Energy is kind of whistling past the graveyard in not increasing the price of summer gasoline any more than they did for this summer's outlook, which I think they increased it around 3-5%. We think it could go much, much higher than that. And I think the other thing, one thing our consultants also have been talking about, and I've kind of talked about a little bit with Ed Kieser as well, is can we have as nice a hurricane season as we had last year? Is that even possible? It was so quiet, and here we are right on the verge of hurricane season and summer driving season, and we're already dealing with almost $3 a gallon gas. So $4 is not hard to envision, given everything that's going on right now.
Yeah, you'll have to count me as skeptical. I'm not sure why. There probably is a good reason that they have to shut those plants down for maintenance in April so that they can be short as they come into the summer season. Skeptically, I'm thinking maybe because they want to reap more. But that's
kind of like Brazil on the ports when the soybeans get ready to be shipped out. There's that Brazil port strike or something like that. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that. Yeah. That's right. Hey, I'll let you go. You have
okay.
A good weekend.
Thank you.
All right. Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon at the bottom of the hour. We'll take a complete look at the ag weather with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. His name's Steve Hilberg. Our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser, says for tonight, across the two-state region in Indiana and southern Illinois, mostly cloudy skies, a few scattered showers elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy lows this evening from 42 in the north to 50 in the south tomorrow. A mix of cloud and guess what? Sunshine, with a few isolated showers and thunderstorms still popping up during the afternoon and early evening, especially in eastern Illinois and across Indiana. Highs tomorrow will range from 66 in eastern Indiana to 74 in the western part of Illinois. The extended forecast says dry and much warmer weather is expected Sunday and Monday. A few scattered showers may return as early as Tuesday afternoon, but mostly dry weather expected until Friday of next week. Dave Dickey is here now with all the ag news for the day.
In agricultural news, the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee says food safety inspections should be taken away from the Food and Drug Administration and given exclusively to USDA. Colin Peterson, speaking about FDA, says, and this is a direct quote, "I don't think they are capable. I don't think they have the resources. And frankly, I don't think they have the culture to do inspections." And Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says the Inspector General should audit USDA.
I think it's important to note that more and more we're getting reports back of food that's not safe. People are getting sick from different kinds of things in our country, whether it's E. coli or salmonella. And so I think we need to have a real comprehensive evaluation of this. We haven't had for some time. And I think we have to find out if the Food and Drug Administration has the ability to really audit our food safety system in this country.
Currently, FDA oversees inspections of processed foods, vegetables, seafood, food additives, and livestock feed. The U.S. Senate has passed the final conference report on the fiscal year 2007 Emergency Supplemental Appropriations Bill by a vote of 51-46. The legislation provides $124.2 billion for the war in Iraq, but it also provides $3.5 billion in emergency disaster assistance for producers impacted by weather. The House passed the supplemental bill Wednesday evening. The president is expected to veto the bill. A new report from the Missouri Rural Crisis Center suggests the Conservation Security Program should be bigger and more comprehensive. The report surveyed farmers and other ag professionals in Missouri, Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois, and Wisconsin. The report found that once farmers are enrolled in the CSP, the majority add new conservation practices to their operations. The International Grains Council raised the world corn crop yesterday to a record 746 million metric tons, 52 million more than in 2006. The IGC puts the U.S. crop at around 315 million metric tons. The IGC says that world corn consumption this growing season will be 755 million metric tons, up 25 million on the year. USDA and FDA say roughly 6,000 U.S. hogs will have to be destroyed because they may have eaten contaminated feed from the same suppliers tied to the national pet food recall. David Elder is director of enforcement for the FDA.
Based on information currently available, FDA and USDA believe the likelihood of illness after eating such pork is extremely low. However, the agencies also believe it's prudent to take this measure. The contaminants in question include melamine and melamine-related compounds, including cyanuric acid, the combination of which is a potential source of concern in relation to human and animal health.
Officials at the Food Safety and Inspection Service say the suspect hogs will not get USDA inspection seal. USDA officials say the government will provide compensation, but did not provide a dollar figure. And the Minnesota Department of Agriculture has lifted the stop sale order for Syngenta GMO corn seed AgriSure RWMIR 604. Last Friday, Minnesota governmental officials ordered the stop because Syngenta failed to obtain required state approval. Syngenta filed application earlier this week, and Minnesota's Plant Protection Division gave the go-ahead late Wednesday. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You can pick that program up off our website after just about 6 o'clock this evening. Our guest this week for Commodity Week, Daryl Good. It'll be at willag.org, that's willag.org, just after 6 p.m. tonight. Well, up next, farmers are busy, as you know, this spring controlling weeds and planting crops, but as you'll hear, they should carefully consider how they go about doing both. Here's a list of weeds in states where they're found that all have something in common. Italian ryegrass in Oregon, Palmer amaranth in Georgia, water hemp in Missouri, common ragweed in Missouri and Arkansas, giant ragweed in Ohio and Indiana, horseweed in Delaware, Kentucky, Tennessee, Indiana, Maryland, Missouri, New Jersey, Ohio, Arkansas, Mississippi, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Nebraska. Well, that something in common is glyphosate resistance in the United States. You can see a listing of these weeds and many others from around the globe at www.weedscience.com. University of Illinois weed scientist Aaron Hager refers farmers to the site in the April 26 edition of the U of I's Pest Management and Crop Development Bulletin. You can read it online at ipm.uiuc.edu/bulletin. In it, Hager writes, as Illinois farmers enter the 2007 growing season, weed scientists continue to stress several significant points related to glyphosate-resistant weeds. One, a selection pressure for herbicide-resistant weeds occurs each time the same herbicide is applied to a particular field. Two, increased adoption of glyphosate-resistant corn hybrids and the exclusion of other weed management tools, i.e. herbicides beyond glyphosate, will speed that selection of glyphosate-resistant weeds. And three, rotating herbicides, sites of action in particular, or tank-mixing herbicides, may help slow that process. Hager says it is imperative farmers do more than just spray glyphosate to control weeds.
That's another advantage of continuing to use various types of soil-applied herbicides. It does introduce at least one, if not more than one, herbicide site of action into that particular field. So the weeds are not necessarily exposed to only one type of herbicide. Some of them undoubtedly will be. But again, it does reduce the entire amount of selection pressure, the more strategies or the more products that are actually used in the field and the weeds are exposed to. So
you might have noted that Illinois is not listed among the states with a glyphosate-resistant weed. It's just not confirmed. But Hager says there are, and farmers must contend with them. The problem is most likely in mare's tail or horseweed.
The real problem could lie in the fact if we miss the mare's tail in the burn down. And say we plant soybean into this field, if you do have this scenario play out and the population is resistant to glyphosate, we really do not have a whole lot of very effective options for control of that mare's tail now after the soybeans have emerged.
Hager says there are soil-applied herbicide options that can be used at planting time or shortly after to control mare's tail in soybeans if the pre-emergence residual burn down failed. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
On this Friday afternoon, time now to take a look at the cash grain market, and we're joined by Bruce Bostert. He is the general manager at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. They have seven East Central Illinois locations. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Farmers getting itchy to get back in the field?
I would say they're ready to go, but we had enough rain that is probably going to be a little while. We made some tremendous progress last week. I would say probably in six effective days where we could do some field work, we went from zero to somewhere between 60-70% planted. We have some people who are finished up, so just amazing how fast it can go in the ground.
I suppose they're satisfied at this point, then looking forward in a few days next week to finish her off.
I think if we can get a few days next week to finish it off, actually Illinois, Central Illinois, is probably going to be in as about as good a shape as anybody in the Corn Belt.
Yeah, the crop in the ground and a few rainfalls on top of it, and that'll be all right, won't
it? That will be fine. A lot better than some of the photos I'm seeing from Ames and West out of Iowa this week.
Awful lot of wet ground out there. Tell me, since they've had a little time that they've not been in the field, have they taken a look at marketing anything?
They've taken a look at the markets, but they're sure not selling much. Matter of fact, I'm getting a couple people looking at maybe buying a contract back as it dips, but I don't know that I would aggressively pursue that. But the cash movement is real slow. And because of that, we're seeing the basis respond. Decatur numbers through the week were up maybe 5 cents on corn. The Gulf is up 3 cents. Beans kind of just the opposite. Gulf is down six and Decatur steady.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are at 347 at Paxton, 337 on new crop. Beans, 694 and 736 on the new crop.
Any final words of wisdom before I let you go for the afternoon?
Well, it's just kind of a case of keep an eye on the sky for a while here, I think.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostert is the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Companies out of Ludlow, Illinois, and joined us on a Friday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. In just 2 minutes, we'll talk with Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, about the agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Two members of the Blagojevich administration visited Champaign today to tout their plan to get more Illinoisans covered by health insurance. The Illinois Covered Plan is part of a sweeping plan for additional health care and education funding, paid for in part through a new tax on gross business receipts. The plan got an endorsement from officials at the CU Public Health District and the Francis Nelson Health Center, which cares for lower-income and uninsured residents. A key lawmaker says a compromise is in the works that would allow Indiana's two horse racing tracks to each pay a $250 million fee to install up to 2,000 slot machines. Democratic Representative Trent Van Haften says some members of a House-Senate conference committee seem to agree on major issues, but need to work on minor points before the legislative session's adjournment deadline Sunday. Under the proposal, the pari-mutuel tracts near Anderson and Shelbyville would pay the fee to install up to 2,000 slot machines. Lawmakers are relying in part on that money to help pay for property tax relief this year. The next president of Western Michigan University will come from Illinois. John Dunn has been named the school's eighth president, and he'll take office July 1st. He's currently the interim chancellor of Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. He was the lone finalist for the Western Michigan job. The school's board voted today to select him for the post. University of Illinois Business School Dean Avijit Ghosh was among the candidates for the job. The dispute over plans for a Hindu temple outside Urbana will go on for at least another month. The attorney for neighbors who oppose the temple says he's been confined to a narrower set of grounds on which to challenge the building plan. Some neighbors worry about drainage and traffic issues. Temple organizers say they just want a place to worship and teach Indian culture to their children. A Central Illinois soldier killed in Iraq is being laid to rest today in the National Cemetery at Springfield. This morning, 25-year-old Private First Class Lucas Starcevich was remembered at a funeral in Savoy. The following procession between the funeral home and Springfield was watched by neighbors and schoolchildren, many of whom placed their hands to their hearts as the hearse passed by. Starcevich was raised in Tolono. He died this month when an improvised explosive device struck his vehicle in Baghdad. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to WILL. It's a Friday afternoon. We're joined by Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, the wet weather's been around, and I guess it's going to leave us. Is that right?
Yeah, we get a sun starting to break out here in the eastern part of the state, and it looks like warm, sunny weather, or warming, sunny weather will be pretty much the rule here for the next 3 days. So those fields that didn't get a lot of rain should start to dry out again pretty well, and those who need to get back in the field should be able to in those areas. The rain really wasn't that heavy over the southern half of Illinois and Indiana, Todd. And so they're in the better shape. But as your previous analyst mentioned, there's parts of Iowa that look like a small lake, and they're having flooding problems there. And we also had a lot of heavy rain across northern Illinois into northern Indiana.
They'll need some seriously warm weather, maybe a good wind or two out that way to get things started. Are they going to get anything like that?
Well, I think we're going to actually be in pretty good shape this week. Winds won't be, we won't have our normal spring windy weather, you know, 15 to 20 miles an hour, but there should be some nice southerly breezes here the next few days, especially into early next week as we get into that southerly flow, and it will be warm. Doesn't look like we have any serious threat for rainfall over the next week or so. There is a chance we could see some scattered showers and thunderstorms across Illinois and Indiana Tuesday night into Wednesday as a weak front comes through. But we got an upper ridge building over us, and that's going to keep things pretty well suppressed. And right now it looks like probably the next serious chance for any rain that might slow things up would be maybe next weekend. So it looks like we got a fairly decent weather period coming up here over the next 5 to 7 days.
You know, the corn in the ground sure would like to have the warm weather. Is warm weather in what kind of temperatures to make it pop up and so you can row it?
Yeah, we should see some low 80s, well, probably even warmer further south, but anywhere from the upper 70s to mid 80s here by early next week, which should help things quite a bit, and let folks who need to get out there get things finished up.
Boy, that ought to do the trick. Any rainfall coming?
No, other than maybe those scattered showers Tuesday, and I'm not really looking at that being a real problem. Most areas probably won't see rain with that. It looks like the next serious chance might be next Friday or Saturday. So we got a good period coming up here.
And we appreciate you being with us.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, joins us from the Illinois State Water Survey right here on Champaign County. And that is this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. Central Time for Commodity Week on the Air. It's our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. Our guest this week, Extension Ag Economist from the U of I, Daryl Good. If you can't wait, you can always pick that up off our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll post it there this evening by just about 6 o'clock. While you're there, make sure you sign up for our weekend newsletter, one of the best newsletters you'll get each and every week. It's all at willag.org, part of the Agricultural Service here at AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a good afternoon and a safe weekend.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.